We're in the middle of the Maral's explanation of the Gemara, Masechta Shabbos, Haraga B'ner, Havan Leibanan Tamina Chachamim. It's somebody that has a dedication. Ragel is like he's dedicated to it. He doesn't miss. It's constant, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So he has Banan Tamina Chachamim. So the Maral has a series of questions. One of his questions is that why is his reward that he has children that Talmid Chacham? If he's well over there, he should have siyata d'shmaya in his own learning. He should be a Talmid Chacham. Okay, there's a sugya in the Gemara. If there's only enough money to pay schar limud, nowadays you'd call that tuition, to pay schar limud for one person, the father, the son, so who gets it? The Gemara says the father comes first. Your own schar limud comes first. And here the Gemara is that the reward for being ragel b'ner is that the children will be tamid chachamim. So just to chaz over some in the kudais, the Maral talks about the pasuk in Mishle, kiner mitzvah v'teira or. A mitzvah is a lantern and teira is light. So lanterns are things in this world. There's only lanterns in this world. And light is real light, is only in the world beyond this world. Real light. Light means understanding. Light means when understanding dawns upon you, when your face lights up. So that doesn't have it. That's not this world. Understanding is not. There's not a single thing in this world. There's not one. Think about it. There's not one thing in this world you could point to that contributes to understanding a concept or an idea. The fish, the trees, the wind, the colors. There is nothing in this world that actually facilitates the process of understanding something. That takes place totally in the mind. And the mind is not something in this world. No one's ever seen a mind, they've ever touched a mind, they've ever smelled a mind. The mind is beyond this world. Because Kineh Mitzvah V'Teror, a mitzvah is a lantern. A mitzvah has a relationship, it relates to this world. And Torah is the world of Torah is the world beyond this world. And Torah only enters this world, there's a portal. What a portal is. There's a portal, Torah only enters this world through our minds. The mitzvahs are with physical objects. The lantern is a physical object. And then another Nafka meaning says that light never ends, true light never ends. But lanterns, they end. They could break. They could crumble. Lanterns have an end to it. There's a certain point where the lantern is no more. Because everything in this world is a wonderful world. It's a world that we can use for mitzvahs. All the physical things in this world were created that we should use for mitzvahs. But they have an end to it. Every lulav has its end. Every esrog has its end. Hanukkah menorah has its end. A rug of an air is a special segula, a special reward for someone that has dedication to the Ner Chanukah, to the Zeichel of Banim Tamid HaChachamim. It's a special schar. It's someone that's ragel b'ner is blessed with eternity. Eternity in terms of the soul, that's the default. The soul is forever. The soul can never be destroyed. The soul never dies. The soul is naturally eternal. There's nothing about the soul that should break down. There's no physical components in the soul that should decompose and break down. So why should the soul break down? But the body breaks down. And that's all the body does. It's constantly breaking down. That's all the body does is break down. So Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to reward a person with eternity in this world. And that's not so simple. How does a Kadosh Baruch Hu reward a person with eternity in this world? Ragel b'ner is a dedication to the mitzvah near Hanukkah. So he has a special dedication to the mitzvah of a lantern. So Mida Keneged Mida, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him an eternal lantern. He does a mitzvah with a lantern, and Kadosh Baruch Hu rewards him with an eternal lantern. Because this world is a lantern. It's a physical object. It's a lantern. And the person gets Olam Hazeh forever. How do you get Olam Hazeh forever? That's where we're holding, I think. That's the point. How do you get Olam Hazeh forever? And the answer is children. One of the Makairis, one of the reasons why a chasna wears a kittel by a chasna. You know, kittel, there's many themes to a kittel. A kittel. Everyone does it. Some people wear the kittel on the outside, some people walk down with the kittel, some people put the kittel on under the chuppah, some people wear a coat over the kittel, everyone wears a kittel. Different minhagim how they wear the kittel. Everyone wears a kittel.
What?
And there's different reasons why. The obvious reason is that the day of the chasna is like Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur you wear a kittel. So Yom Kippur you wear a kittel. So the Melech Chasna you also wear a kittel. Is it minhag to fast on the day of chasna? It's like Yom Kippur.
No,
the day it's a minute, right? It's actually a dying minute. Less and less people are doing it.
Really?
It's hard for people to fast.
I thought
it was a must. Yeah, me too. If you view it as a must, then that's a good way. That's a good attitude. You should do it. There's no comparison between going to the chasna eating and going to the chasna while fasting. It's a totally different experience. You feel very removed from this world when you're fasting and holy and uplifted.
What about a person for his 20th
birthday? Well, that's a thing also, right? Well, my 20th birthday is months of Pesach, so I want to eat donuts. That's why.
It's similar.
Is that a thing?
Not a wise pet minute. It's not a minute that Klai Yisrael. Fasting by the 20th birthday is not a minute that Klai Yisrael took upon themselves. It's Yechidim. It's Yechidim because when a person's 20, he becomes liable for a Kiyum Mitzvah. So he wants to purify himself. So it's a good, it's an Hagat Teiva.
It sounds like a good idea to me.
It's a good idea, it's an Hagat Teiva.
But if someone gets you a birthday cake,
you still don't do it.
Who's we?
General world.
Fasting on
Minig is a kiyah, but if someone has a reason why it's hard for them, so the minig wasn't accepted by people that's hard for them. Their clients, who are the ones that were makabel the minig? The people that were able to do it. I'll give an example. There's a minig to fast on Erev Rosh Hashanah. It's brought down. It's a minute to fast in Erev Rosh Hashanah. If someone's not feeling well, they don't need a Torah Sandarim. They can just eat. they don't have to be Mashlim. They don't need a Shlama. They can just eat. So the minute to fast on the day of Chasm is also a minute. If someone's not feeling well, so don't. Because the minute has a takeoff, has a power. Because of the Kabbalah of Klai Yisrael. Klai Yisrael is a Makabal of Minig, so the Minig becomes something that's mutl, it's incumbent on a Bnei Yisrael. But if they're never Makabal, in a case where someone doesn't feel well, so there's no Kiev. The Tanaishim, especially the Tanaishim of the Churban, there was a Takanah Rabbanon that we have to do it. So there's two types of chiyuvim. There's a chiyuv that's imposed on us from above, from Rabbanon, and then there's a chiyuv which it's a grassroots chiyuv. The Klai Yisrael accepted upon themselves that this is the way Klai Yisrael is going to be. Klai Yisrael defines themselves. We are people that we fast on Erev Rosh Hashanah. We are people that we fast when we go. That's what we are. So the nafka means if someone's not feeling well. When someone's sick, even by Takana Rabbanon, you have to. So if someone's not feeling well, if they're not feeling well, it's hard for them. Very hard for them. So then they don't even need a Taurus in the arm. I'm saying there's more and more people that are not fasting. It's hard. It's a fast day, it's a chasna, there's so many things you have to do. What do you have to do, you know? What do you have to do in the chasna? I don't know, sometimes you gotta do things. I think the biggest mitzvah of a chasna on day to chasna is to stay out of things and not do anything. Just stay out of things. I'm serious. You know, go find a place to hide where nobody could call you. Turn off your phone. Give your phone to your best friend, and let him write down every single phone call that comes in. I'll tell the chasna. Let him make a list. Then by the chasna, the day after the chasna, you can look at this list of your friends that they called you. Get rid of the phone. Fast, go to the mikveh, do tshuva, so hide somewhere. I mean, I was able to do that until they called me for the pictures. The Heilige pictures. The Heilige pictures. They come 4 hours before the wedding because of the pictures. I was in Gan Eden. They pulled me out of Gan Eden for the pictures.
Were they good pictures?
I liked the pictures. There were certain things that they had me do that I knew that we were never going to pick those pictures because they're just pictures I wouldn't take. You know? Picture me holding the ring and looking at it. And things like that. Me shaking my brother's hand like that. We're not going to put that in the oven anyway. So those I sort of messed up on purpose. I can show them to you. I have the proofs. I knew we were not going to take it. The pictures which we were going to take. I more or less behaved. They're very nice pictures. Although if you look at them, you know that they're from 1984. Yeah, the fat ties, the big glasses, small brimmed hats.
Pull the air.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why a chassan wears a kittel under the chuppah is because it's like Yom Kippur. That's one of the reasons. It's probably one of the more well-known reasons. But I once saw a mucker because the outcome of getting married is children. Miklai is an am kadosh that we don't have children outside of Kiddushin. The way to have children is through Kedushin. Kedushin is the gateway of children. We don't just have, we're not animals, we're human beings. We're not behemoths, we're mentioned. Every year there's a mensch. And a mensch doesn't have children the same way animals do. They do it with Kedushin. So chasna represents the gateway to children. And children carry on for a person after he dies. Now why should you have children? Whatever you have to do in life, you'll do it. The tarot is, there's things that people leave unfinished, and the children come afterwards and continue the great work of their parents, and then their children's children, and then their children's children's children. So the drive, the impetus that drives people to get married is because they don't live forever. So they're getting married in order to live forever, because if a person dies, Rahman al-San, he will live forever through his children and his children's children. So that's why you wear a kittel by the chuppah, because the kittel resembles the burial shrouds. So Chassan wears the kittel to remind himself he's not getting married in order to have a jolly time. He's getting married for a purpose. The purpose is that he has a job. He is put on this world to do something, and if he doesn't finish, he's going to give it over to his children. They're going to carry it after him. So the tachrich, and to remind a person of the purpose of Kedushin. Children are eternity. Children and children's children, and children, it never ends. So Rogel ben Ner, so he treasures Elam Haza. He uses Elam Haza. He uses the lantern for its proper purpose. Lanterns have many purposes you could use them for. You can recharge a ring with it, a lot of purposes. But he uses the lantern. He uses the lantern to light up the world with the nace, Pirsum Anisa. He used the lantern for Pirsum Anisa. So he deserves to have a lantern forever, and the only way to have a lantern forever is to have children. So your children are Talmid HaChachamim. Because if you have children, so number one, you live on forever through your children. And your children, if they're Talmid HaChachamim, your children are a vessel to bring light into the world. They're Talmid HaChachamim, they're a vessel to bring light into the world. So God is rewarding you for your avodah with lanterns, with children, that they're perpetual lanterns. They're lanterns that they never go out. They never decompose. They never come apart at the seams. They last forever. And even if they die, they have children. So you have the eternal flame, the eternal lanterns. The person himself, he might be a tamachat. He'll be a tamachat. If someone is Raga Baner, he'll be a Talmud Chacham himself also. He will. Of course he'll be a Talmud Chacham. Someone that understands what it is. Someone that understands what Ner Chanukah is, he will be a Talmud Chacham. But he's going to die. So that's not the reward. The reward is not that he's going to be a Talmud Chacham. The reward is going to have children, because children mean that he lives on after death. He's kind of Elam Haza. Welcome to the Havana Bones. That's your side. This is one of the biggest chasadim that someone could do is the mitzvah of Yibam. There's a sefer called Nefesh HaChaim. It's not by Reb Chaim Volozhin. It's a different Nishmas Chaim. I'm sorry. It's called Nishmas Chaim. There's a sefer called Nishmas Chaim, but he talks about the Yisrael of Yibam. He talks about the Tais of Er v'Ayna. Who is Er? Who is Ayna? Who is Er? The two elder sons of Yehuda. Er married Tamar. Tamar was a beautiful woman. She was a beautiful woman. She was nine generations above Er.
What? She was Shem Sarah, right?
Yeah, so she could have been 1,000 years old. Well, at least in the hundreds. At least in the hundreds, I'm saying. Depending.
Is that a fact that she was Shem's daughter?
She was Shem's daughter, which means that she was 10 generations away from Er.
But Shem could have had her when he was like 600.
Correct. But it's in the hundreds. She's in the hundreds. So Er... He didn't want to have children with Tamar. Because he wanted her to have the body of a woman that never had children. The Kodesh Baruch Hu got angry at Er and struck him down. Er died. And Einan performed the mitzvah of Yibam, and he married his sister-in-law. But he didn't want to have children with her either. And the pasuk says, Ki leila yehazara. He knew that the children wouldn't be his child.
That was his reason?
Right. He had a totally different reason. His reason was he didn't want the physical beauty of his wife to be marred. But Einan, he didn't want to have a child that wouldn't be his child.
It's not considered your child?
Since the Sefer Nishma Zachaim said he was mistaken. He had a mistaken impression of what Yibam is. Because the pasuk says that the child that's born is born al shem the father. So he understood that when the brother of the when the surviving brother marries the almana, the widow, so since the surviving brother has a kesher with his dead brother, his brothers have a spiritual connection, they have a spiritual bond. So somehow or another, his dead brother's soul combines with the widow, and they produce a child. It's something like the living brother is like a host for the dead brother's soul. And when he marries his sister-in-law, it's like reuniting the dead brother with his wife. And the child's not his. And this is what people thought. And Nishmas Chaim, he says it's a misconception. He was wrong. The pasuk says that the child that's born will be called Al Shem HaMeis. He'll be called after the name of the Meis. And Einan's misconception was that he's going to be called by the name of the Meis because the Meis, the dead brother, is his father.
When it says call the name of the Meis, it means you name the child after him.
Right. So he says there's no mitzvah to do that. There's no mitzvah to call him after the father. You don't have to give the child that name. And he said there was never a minute to do such a thing. He said this is a misconception. I know it was wrong. And he brings a raya. There's another time that there was Yibam. There was Yibam between Boaz and Rus. Because Rus was married to Mahlon. Mahlon was Boaz's first cousin. Mahlon was Boaz's first cousin. Mahlon. Two brothers, Mahlon and Kilion, the children of Elimelech and Naomi. It's Sefer Rus. And Boaz was a cousin. Boaz's father was Salmon. And Salmon was a brother to Elimelech. There were three brothers that we know of. Salmon, Elimelech, and Tov. According to some authorities, Tov is Pliny Almighty, same person. And Salmon, Elimelech, and Tov were the sons of Nachshon ben Aminadav. And so you have Boaz, ben Salmon, ben Nachshon, ben Aminadav. So they were the aristocracy of Klal Yisrael, there from Shemesh Yehuda. And Mahlon died. Mahlon was married to Rus. Mahlon died. Had no children. Boaz did Yibam. And the child's name was Oved. So you see, he didn't call the child after Boaz. They didn't call the child. I mean, that's all right. They didn't call the child Mahlon. They didn't call the child any. You know, the child had his own name. But the Torah said that Naomi took Oved. And she nursed Oved, and the neighbors said, Yulad ben Lanami. Nami has a son. No, it's not Nami's son. In fact, it's not related to her in any way, shape, or form. It's a cousin. It's her nephew's child. It's a great nephew. It's not her son. Yulad ben Lanami. So the Nishmas Chaim brings a raya from this. this child was Oved. And Oved is a product of a Yibam. And they're calling Oved her son. Who was her son? Her son was Machlon. And Machlon was made to Rus, and Machlon died. And Rus did Yibam with Bayez and had a child. And that child is Nami's son. So that means that the child of a Yibam is the one that died. So Reuven and Shimon are brothers, and Reuven, you learning Yavamis? Reuven and Shimon are brothers, and Reuven died. And Reuven's wife marries his brother Shimon, and they have a child. That child has the neshama of Reuven. The one that dies comes back into this world through a body of a child that was born.
It's always the same as Akhtashon?
Well, it's the Yisrael of Gilgal. It's called the Yisrael of Gilgal on Hashemus, which we know nothing about. It's the Yisrael of Gilgal on Hashemus.
Doesn't there Rizal have a sefer?
Yes, but she does. Yisrael of Gilgal on Hashemus.
So, doesn't he like give all the rules of the Talmud and stuff?
Yeah. That's why there's an article of clothing that's closely affiliated with Yibam. It's the shoe. When someone refuses to do Yibam, so then he performs the mitzvah chalitza. And the mitzvah chalitza is he takes off his shoe. His foot is barefoot. And his sister-in-law, the widow of his dead brother, she spits in the direction of the shoe. She doesn't spit in the shoe. She spits in the direction of the shoe. There's no mitzvah to spit in the shoe. He's got to walk away with the spit in the shoe. There's no mitzvah to spit in the shoe. She spits towards the shoe. But why a shoe? Because it's very difficult to walk in this world without shoes. Shoes are what enable us to walk in the world. We can have a lot of wonderful things we want to do in this world. We can have places we want to see, places to go, things to do, things to see, places to go, to do, to see. And since we can't get there, if we don't have a pair of shoes, we can't get there. We're going to stay in one place and not do anything. But if someone gives us a pair of shoes, then there's no limit. We can go anywhere. We could spread out all over the place. Someone that lives in this world is capable of so much. If he dies and leaves children afterwards, so he still interacts with the world. He still walks with the world. Because there's a body. The body of his child is in this world. And the body of his child is able to do things. And that body of the child is only here because the child had a father. The father gave birth to the body of the child. So it's the father's body. At least the father's responsible for the body being here. So when that child walks, it's the father walking. But if someone dies without children, they exist, but they can't walk in the world. Their relationship with this world is over. They can't earn any schar. They can't earn any reward. Can't do any mitzvahs. So the brother marries the sister-in-law, and then the soul is able to come back into this world, and the baby that's born does mitzvahs, and those mitzvahs count and are placed in the cheshbon of the dead brother. He gets a new body. The dead brother gets a new body. He can walk in this world again.
Why wouldn't this come from anybody else? Why wouldn't the brother?
Because it's people that come from the same bus or the same father. So then they have a kesher with each other. There has to be a gateway for the neshama to enter the world. The neshama enters the world because the body is a combination of the two people that are closest to the dead brother. And the two people that are closest of the brother and the wife. You can't get closer than that. The brother and the wife are the two that are closest. They come from the same parent.
Why are we doing it anymore?
It's very difficult to do L'shem Shemayim. That somebody actually likes his sister-in-law. He's marrying her because the Torah allows it. So it's very bad. It's a bad marriage. There's ramifications.
What is this whole chalitza concept? Like the whole ceremony?
No,
like,
that's what I'm saying. That's inside. The reason... The chalitza... The spitting is a lack of derech eretz. Because you should have done even. Because the biggest chesed you could do to someone is to give him eternity. And I understand what even is all about. Your brother, he's dead. I don't mean your brother, but... The surviving brother, his brother's dead. He can't walk in the world anymore. He's like somebody without shoes. A dead person that doesn't have children is like someone without shoes. They exist, but they can't go anywhere. Do you understand the analogy? And you have the opportunity, you, the surviving brother, you have the opportunity of giving your brother a new set of shoes. Because if you marry his widow, the child that's born is a body, is a physical body, and then your dead brother's neshama can go back into the physical body and walk in the world again. And you are denying your brother, you're denying his soul from entering into this world. So the analogy is that you're not allowing your brother to acquire a new pair of shoes. So you have to lose your shoes. That's why you take your shoes off also. Understand? So now you take your shoes off, and she spits at you because you deserve it. And that's why Einan died. Einan died because he denied his brother. He denied his brother the opportunity of coming in. And Hashem got angry at him. Children are eternity. In this world, eternity in Shemayim, for eternity you don't need children for eternity in Shemayim. The soul exists, the soul is eternal. Eternity in this world is children. So that's the answer to one question in the Maharal. The Raga Bener Havali Banam Tamid HaChamim. That in return for being Raga Bener, his children are Tamid HaChamim because that represents eternity in Olam Hazeh. Were the Gemara to say that the person himself is going to be a Tamid HaChamim, that's not eternity. The person himself is going to die. So Hashem wants to give him more than that. His children are going to be Tamid HaChamim, just forever. The next question Maral asks is that the Gemara talks about mezuzah. If someone is Zahir, takes great care in the mitzvah of mezuzah, he'll have a dira now. And the Maral says, why don't you say that about any mitzvah? If you do the mitzvah of Shiluch HaKen, you have good omelets or something like that. So there's obviously something about mezuzah special. The Amar Azay b'mezuzah, Zeki Adam Acher Moisei. After death, the Mukan Shila Menucha. After death is a time to finally rest. Olam Hazeh is not a time to rest. My wife's grandfather. His name is Mendy Schreiber. Menachem Mendel Schreiber. He was a nephew of a great person, Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich was the principal of Torah V'das. He was the founder of a network of schools called Torah Mesira. He was also one of the big supporters of the city of Bnei Brak. He had a hand in building Bnei Brak. And he sent his talmidim all across America to start schools. There's no one in the firm world today that wasn't impacted. You know the Alexander Sally Gross Academy in Florida?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's his talmidim. The Gross, Alexander Gross, or Sander Gross was his Talmud. He sent his Talmudim to build day schools all across America. And he had heart disease from a young age. The doctors at the age, when he was about, I don't know, he could have been 18, 19, 20. A young man, the doctor gave him about 5 months to live. He had heart disease. He suffered from major heart disease the majority of his life. And the doctor told him that he has a few months to live. And he didn't lead his life based on what doctors told him. He didn't live in that world. He walked out of the doctor's office, and someone said, "Well, what did the doctor say?" He says, "I got a few months to live." No? He says, "Kvetam schlock überleben. I'm going to outlive that schlock." And he did, by the way. He outlived the schlock. But he had heart disease. It was serious heart disease. He lived to the 60s. I mean, he had heart disease for about 50 years of his life, and those were the 50 years that he built Torah all over the world. He built Torah with heart disease. He never had a day in his life that he felt good. When he wasn't well, he was really not well. When he couldn't. That means coming out of bed would have been psychosis nefashis. When he had his final heart attack, A little bit of akdama. There's halacha that during benching, one is not permitted to have a knife on the table. You may call during weekdays. The knives have to be removed from the table. Because when we say V'nei Yerushalayim, we should be filled with such pain that knives, we shouldn't be around sharp objects. There's such pain that V'nei Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim is destroyed. It's in ruins, and it hasn't yet come down the time to rebuild. And it's dangerous to be around sharp implements. So he takes them off the table. See, nowadays, this became like a halacha. You take the knife off the table because it says in the Gemara you're supposed to take it off the table. So we do it, you know, and then the extra clay can have all extra clay and shilas. Is it all knives? It's only sharp knives. Is it scissors? What about a nail clipper? And whatever. Is it the shame knife that you're not supposed to have there? So it doesn't matter what kind. As long as it's called a knife, it's a kalei shame. It's only something that could cause injury. So we did. We declare our shalos. We declare, could you cover it over? Do you have to take it off? You just cover it over. What if somebody's in the middle of using a knife? Do you attempt to take it away from them? You know, all these shalos come up, you know. While you're benching, so somebody's eating the steak with a knife. They have to take the knife away. Or since he's holding it, there's no chashash you're going to grab it away from him because he's going to stop you. And we have our steak. Someone's going to put out a safer hilchos sakinim. Or sakinim kehilchasai. There's everything else. But the spirit of halacha is that the knife has to go off the table because if it's on the table, it's a danger. And does anyone think like that? Rav Shlaga Feivel did. He died in 1948. You know what went on in 1948. There was a Muhammad in Eretz Yisrael, and everyone thought that the Yidden were going to lose. Could you imagine if they would have lost? The Arabs would have conquered Eretz Yisrael, and what they would have done to the survivors. And during the weekdays, so you were able to find out from the news how the world was going. But on Shabbos, you didn't know. On Shabbos, in the middle of the war, when Shlaga Feivel got to V'nei Yerushalayim, he had such pain. And he said, "What's going to be?" He said, "Vasu Zayim at Eretz Yisrael." He had a heart attack. In the middle of V'nei Yerushalayim. He didn't need a knife to hurt himself. He was able to cut himself without a knife. See? And he was in an oxygen tent. He lived for a few weeks afterwards. My uncle, my great uncle, my wife's grandfather's brother. He visited Shlaga Feivel in the hospital. He had all his papers there, his briefcase, all this. He was working. He ran so many institutions. And from the oxygen tent in the hospital, he had work piled up. And he heard that doctors tell him, Reb Mendelovich, or Mr. I don't know if they called him Reb Mendelovich, Mr. Mendelovich, yeah, he didn't tolerate being called Rabbi. He didn't respond to Rabbi. So whatever they call them, I don't know what they call them. But they said, you're in danger. You're hovering between life and death. You only have 3 weeks to live. What are you doing? With all these papers. And my great uncle heard him say this. He said, I only have a few weeks to live. I have to do even more work. This world is not a world for resting. There's an end. There's a limit. The world comes to an end, and then we have to stop working. Whatever we get done before gets done. And whatever doesn't get, if we put putting things off, there's a point in time when we won't be able to do those things. All our grand plans, all our plans for self-improvement, I once asked a guy, do you really plan on spending your whole life being such a loser, or are you planning on someday just making some mature decisions? Nobody wants to be a loser their whole life. But they're enjoying being a loser. Being a loser, they're enjoying it in the meantime. You're a loser, you have no responsibility. You have no way to go but up. You're so low, you can't go, you have no way to go but up. There's a time when the clock stops. This world is not a world for Menucha, but next world is a time for Menucha. A Gan Eden is a time for Menucha. A person after death of Mukun Shiela Menucha, that's the time to rest. You have a house, Mukun Menucha, so when you want to rest, you go home. When a person dies, the Pasuk of Kehelet says it's described as a person going to the house of his world. Olam Haba is referred to as the house of your world, called Beis Olamai. You go to the house of your world. And the Medrash says, Malam Shekol Tzadok V'Tzadok Eishli Madur V'Nich Vaydei, that there's an abode, there's a dwelling place. In Gan Eden, it's built to standard based on the amount of kavod that the person earned in his life. Mashal Melech Shenichnas Hu Ba'avodav L'Ir. King comes into a city with his entourage and all his servants, his attendants. Shem Nichnasim B'Shar Echad. When they walk into the city, they all go through the same gate. The king and his slaves, they go through the same gate. There's no difference between the king and the slaves when they go through the gate. All the same. There's no special gate for slaves. Shem Lana, but when they go to sleep, they rest. In this world, we all go through the same gate. Some people get more covered, some people get less covered. You have a melech, you have a vadim. We're all in the same world. We occupy the same space. And the difference between people is not, the people that deserve the covet in this world are the ones that get it. There's people that don't deserve covet that they do get it. Because in this world is not time for resting. When you're active, so it's not clear the differences between people. This world leads to the next world. This is the antechamber. This is the hallway. This is Haskalah. It's very difficult to tell things apart when you're starting out. Besides, when it's all over, when it's time to go to sleep because you're finished, you guys come to yeshiva. 44 guys come to yeshiva at the beginning of the year. And they think they're so original. I don't let people tell me what to do. I'm my own man. I'm not like everybody else. I'm going to do things my way. And to do the same thing that every single guy is doing at the same time, year after year after year after year. They're all excited about, you know what I did? I've heard this before. And what'd you do? You do this, you do that. Come on, you make a list of 4 or 5 things. And it's all over. When you come in, the Haskalah, this is the Maharal says, the Haskalah, when you start on a journey, the first steps on a journey, there's no individuality. Everyone's in the same place. When you're finished, when it's at the end, when it's time to rest, so then you see the uniqueness of each and every person's journey. That's it. It's a muscle. The king and the servants, they come into the same gate when they go to sleep. The king doesn't sleep with the servants. I remember there's a Baal Chesed in London. His name is Jackie Levison. L-E-V-I-S-O-N. Jackie Levison. His son-in-law is the Rosh Yeshiva of Imre Bina. Rabbi Baran. Rabbi Baran's father, Jackie Levison, he is the Machnas Arkim of London. And maybe even more of other countries as well. He's the, he has this tremendous house. Everyone sleeps in it. Everyone. All kinds. You know, Rabbanim, Schnarrers, beggars, homeless people, Chashra people. They're all there. I have a friend. His name is Yossi. Yossi was dying to see this. He went to London. Well, first he went to Manchester, and he was in Manchester Yeshiva for a while. The Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva in Manchester was Rabbi Yehuda Segal, Zichro Levracha. The Tzadik Ador, Rabbi Yehuda Segal, Zichro Levracha. So he went there and he learned there for his man. People used to go for Elzman. They'd hop over to Manchester and learn there for Elzman. It's a foreign country and they do speak English somewhat. And then you get to learn from, they would follow up Segal around, just watch him. And then he hopped over to London. He wanted to stay with Jackie Levison. Yes, he's the type of guy within 20 minutes he's your best friend. See, he made palsy-walsy with Jackie Levison. He says, I'm going to stay here, and you are never going to, you've had guests, you've never had a guest like me. After I leave you, you'll say, you've never had anybody like me in your life. And Jackie says, okay, we'll try it out, we'll see. He says, just one thing, I'm sleeping on the same floor as you, Jackie. I'm not sleeping with all those other people. Whatever you got here, I'm not sleeping there. I am sleeping on your floor. You're going to find me on your floor. I'm sleeping somewhere near you. But your family. And he says, okay. He went to sleep at night. He found out that Jackie sleeps on the floor with the schnorrers and the schleppers. He gave him a room on that floor. He blew his mind. That's where he sleeps. He sleeps among them. That's where he sleeps. He gave him a ride that I'll never forget. I mean, they both gave each other a ride, actually, that I'll never forget. And the Haskalos HaDerek, you're all the same. When you go to sleep, that's where that's where it's different. You go to Menucha. Because when you go to sleep, you finish your job. If you finish your job, then you did something truly unique. You did your job. You didn't do someone else. You did something truly unique. When you start, everyone's starting. When you begin, no one's doing their job, they're just starting. Everyone learns how to walk the same. And then once you learn how to walk, then you walk your walk. While you're learning how to walk, everyone knows how you walk the same. Everyone does everything the same in the beginning. When you finish, that's when individuality sets in. That's why it says, Azaya b'mezuzah. The mezuzah has, they're special in Yanam and the mezuzah. Number one, the mezuzah is one of the only mitzvahs that has the Shem Hashem on it. It's a mitzvah that has the Shem Hashem. Tefillin has it, Sevetara has it, Alulu doesn't have it, and Esther doesn't have it, a coin does have it, it says in God we trust. And they're going to make that illegal soon. It's going to be illegal to spend money. There's going to be a suit. Is you forcing people? There's going to be a suit by a group of atheists or some liberal Jewish people that sympathize with their plight. Some Jew is going to get there and they're going to sue the government that they're forcing their principles on people by making them use money, that the money declares a belief in a higher power. It's going to happen. Mark my words, it will happen.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But the mitzvahs don't have God's name in it. The mezuzah is one of the few mitzvahs Yes, God's name. In the mezuzah itself, but also on the other side, on the flip side. It is the Shem Elokim on the other side. And mezuzah is Tyra. It's a mitzvah which is Tyra. Not all mitzvahs are like that. You shech the cow, the knife isn't Tyra. You take every one of 10 sheep, the sheep is not Tyra. But the mezuzah is a mitzvah which is Tyra. So mitzvahs in general bring us closer to God, but a mitzvah that's Tyra is on another level. The kirva between the Eisei mitzvah and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is very strong. When you do a mitzvah, there's God's name in it. So it brings a closeness. If you're Zayi b'mezuzah, being Zayi b'mezuzah means that you take special care of the mitzvah mezuzah because it's drawing you closer to the one that commands you to do the mezuzah. And it's evident that he's the one that commands you to do the mezuzah. And it's clear that you're drawing close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because the mitzvah is done with something that has Hashem's name in it. And there's Hashem's word. If you do another mitzvah, you do Hashem's Aveda. Is it evident? Is it clear that you're coming closer to Hashem by doing the mitzvah of Hashem's Aveda? It's subtle. You have to think a little bit in order to see that. I'm doing the mitzvah of Hashem's Aveda. Why? And I want to be a nice guy. I feel bad for him. It's not clear. There's so many other. But you do a mitzvah. There is no other agenda than coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no social reasons to put the mezuzah. And my father has this story about a guy who was doing business in Hong Kong. And he was a Jewish guy. He put mezuzahs on his apartment. And his partner was a Chinese businessman. He said, "What is this stuff you got on your door?" So he says, "It's a scroll with the Holy Torah, and it protects our house." And the guy said, "I've been having a series of break-ins in all my businesses and my houses. I could use that. Could you hook me up with it?" He said, "Sure." And he put mezuzahs all over the Chinese man's businesses and houses. And he met him later. He says, "How are things going?" He said, "I haven't had a break-in since you put in a mezuzah." He says, "So it's great." He says, "Well, not really." He said, "Why?" "Because every night there's a knock on the door. This is Kalak, this is Kalak, this is Kalak." A mezuzah is not just a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that's begali, that we're coming close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. There is no social reason to have a mezuzah. So if you're Zayi b'mezuzah, why are you Zayi b'mezuzah? You're Zayi b'mezuzah is because you will see this and you understand this and you want a relationship with God, and the way to get close to God is to do his mitzvahs, and an extra special closeness with God is to do a mitzvah that his name is on the mitzvah. And you're connecting his name to your house because you want your house to be connected with God. So that's a reward after death. Being Zohar in Ner Chanukah, you're careful with the lantern. You're Raga with Ner Chanukah, so you get eternity in this world. But if somebody's Zohar Mezuzah, there's something special about Mezuzah, you get eternity in the next world. You want a relationship with God? You're going to get it after death. After death, you're going to have a unique relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, because after death, that's the time when you finish doing what you came to this earth to do. That's the time where it's time for you to rest from all your hard-earned labors, and where you attain the level that you're so unique, your relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu forever. And it's only by mezuzah, not by anything else.